and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. With 27 countries and NATO now having expelled more than 140 Russian spies under diplomatic cover, we'll begin with the growing support for the UK Prime Minister Theresa May's response to a Russian nerve agent attack on British soil. Charles Kupchan, a professor of international affairs at Georgetown University School of Foreign Service, who spent the last 3 years of the Obama administration as special assistant to President Obama for national security, joins us to discuss the unexpectedly strong response in support of the UK's weak leader and whether finally standing up to Putin will curb the Russian president's brazen flouting of international norms. We'll assess why Trump, who has so far not said a bad word about Putin, agreed to expel 60 Russians, and speculate about what possible motives Putin might have for using a weapon of mass destruction against a NATO country. And because so many Russian oligarchs have parked their ill-gotten gains in what is jokingly referred to as Londongrad, is Putin betting that the UK will not freeze these assets because the hit on top of the chaos from Brexit would be too damaging to Britain's banking system? Then we'll examine moves by China's self-declared leader for life, Xi Jinping, to impose Communist Party censorship on Hollywood movies, and speak with Anne Kokas, a professor of media studies at the University of Virginia, who is currently a fellow at the Wilson Center working on a project, Border Control on the Digital Frontier, China, the United States, and the Global Battle for Data Security. The author of Hollywood Made in China, she joins us to discuss how, in order to maintain its quota in China's market, which accounts for 1/5 of the global box office, Hollywood is already tailoring its movies to please Communist Party censors. Then finally, we'll discuss the op-ed by former Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens, Repeal the Second Amendment, and speak with Jonathan Lowy, the director of the Legal Action Project at the Brady Center to Prevent Gun Violence. He joins us to argue that under current law, most of what the young activists called for at last Saturday's March for Our Lives rallies across the country and around the world would be constitutional. But with another Second Amendment extremist like Justice Gorsuch on the court, even more pro-gun rights pushed by the NRA could become the law of the land. And joining us now is Charles Kupchan, who was Director of European Affairs on the National Security Council during the Clinton administration. He's now a Professor of International Affairs at Georgetown University School of Foreign Service, and he spent the last 3 years of the Obama administration as Special Assistant to President Obama for National Security Affairs. He's the author of The End of the American Era, U.S. Foreign Policy and the Geopolitics of the 21st Century, Power in Transition, The Peaceful Change of International Order, and How Enemies Become Friends, The Sources of Stable Peace. Welcome to Background Briefing, Charles Kupchan.
Glad to be with you.
And NATO announced today it's expelling 7 Russian diplomats who are, I assume, are spies operating under diplomatic cover because of the nerve agent attack on the UK. This is in addition to the fact that 26 countries have also expelled Russian envoys in the last couple of days in solidarity with Theresa May. She's not been seen as a particularly decisive leader, and she has obviously trouble at home in terms of her tenure. But it does seem that a lot of countries have rallied around her and given her a shot in the arm.
Well, it's interesting that we do seem to see a crystallization of a readiness to stand up to Putin in a way that we really have not seen since the invasion of Ukraine back in 2014, when the U.S. and its European allies came together and imposed sanctions with other countries joining in as well. And then we went through a period that involved the Russian intervention in Syria, the Russian hacking into our election. They've been doing the same thing across Europe for the last few years, with no real response. And then you had this poisoning in the UK of a former Russian spy, and all of a sudden that seemed to stiffen the spine of European leaders as well as Donald Trump. And really, since the first time that he became president, he has allowed something to happen that I would call punishment, that I would call pushback against Putin. And so in some ways, this poisoning incident has put people over the top. They are finally ready to to start punishing Putin for his behavior.
Well, we had the shootdown of the Malaysian airliner, which was pretty horrific. And, of course, you mentioned annexing Crimea and starting a war against Ukraine. What's your sense of whether this is going to impact the World Cup? Because there's obviously already Iceland has decided not to go to the World Cup. It seems that that's the kind of thing that would punish Putin more than anything else, because he's acting like a thug and he seems to be pretty immune to criticism. And we can get into speculating why he did it in the first place or why he authorized it. But what's your sense of whether there could be a building movement to boycott the World Cup, Soccer World Cup in the summer in Moscow?
When the Russians first went into Ukraine, there were some folks around who were saying, why don't we boycott the World Cup? Why don't we announce that we're taking it away from Russia? I haven't heard that kind of talk come back. You may recall that when the Brits announced their expulsions, they also announced that the royal family would boycott the cup and would not go to Russia to watch the English team. But I haven't picked up any further discussion about that. If we see Putin retaliate and we get into a tit-for-tat dynamic in which both sides are expelling diplomats, both sides perhaps moving toward economic boycotts or sanctions, then I could see that outcome, because it would definitely hit at Putin and the Kremlin that prizes Russia's place among the nations, and so it would certainly be a serious punishment to Putin. I have yet to pick up that that is now part of the conversation.
Well, there's already been reciprocal expulsion of British diplomats or spies from Russia following Theresa May's expulsion of Russians. But one of the theories that I've heard to sort of explain such a brazen act of using a weapon of mass destruction on a NATO member's soil is a sense that the Russian oligarchs already own London and the Brits are sort of supplicants. What do you make of that?
You know, I think that Putin has gotten away with too much. And he plays a sly game. Going back to the invasion of Ukraine, it's smoke and mirrors. There are little green men. The people that are fighting in Donbas and eastern Ukraine may be Russian soldiers, but they're on vacation. We heard a couple of months ago that a bunch of Russians died in an air strike in Syria, and it turns out they, too, were mercenaries. And then when it comes to hacking, Putin keeps denying that he had anything to do, that Russia had anything to do with the U.S. election. And so it's this constant bobbing and weaving, constant obfuscation of what's going on. But it now appears that that folks have just gotten tired of it. They've run out of patience. And I think that the situation is positive in the sense that countries are standing by the UK, especially the EU, at a time when the UK is actually leaving the European Union. Why London? I think it was more a target of opportunity. You do have former spies that have taken place, taken up residence in the UK. But you're right to point out that there is an enormous amount of Russian money in London, and we have yet to see May take steps to freeze those assets or to do things to go after Putin's inner circle. That may be coming, but I think May is reluctant to do that because of the hit that the British economy would take.
And again, I'm speaking with Charles Kupchan, who was Director of European Affairs on the National Security Council during the Clinton administration. He's now a Professor of International Affairs at Georgetown University School of Foreign Service, and he spent the last 3 years of the Obama administration as Special Assistant to President Obama for National Security. And his latest book is How Enemies Become Friends, The Sources of a Stable Peace. Well, first of all, I wanted to speculate with you about what possible motives. Obviously, there are two audiences, or perhaps three. On the one hand, when Putin apparently authorized the use of polonium against a exiled Russian in London a while back, that was a signal to defectors within the intelligence community that this is your fate. But it was also, I think, a signal to his own audience in Russia that I'm a strong guy and I'm standing up to the West. And a lot of speculation is that this attack on the UK happened just before the Russian election, and that was meant to send a signal to the Russian people that I'm strong and I'm standing up to the West. So what explains, I mean, it seems like he basically gets away with it because, you know, it's a wink and a nod, you know. He denies that he did it to the West while winking to his own people. Like, yes, I did it, and I got away with it, and aren't I clever?
Well, I think you put your finger on both of the motivations. One is that he wants to deter other Russian intelligence agents from turning, and he wants to send the message that if you betray Mother Russia, we will find you and we will make you pay. The other is that Putin has no real political calling card other than nationalism, standing up to the West, pretending that he has taken Russia back to being a great power after the collapse of the Soviet Union. Russia has no knowledge economy. It's still heavily dependent on energy revenues. It's in demographic decline. And so Putin really has nothing there except this brash and aggressive brand of nationalism. Did he authorize this attack to take place just before the Russian election? I think the Russians are good, but they're not that good. I doubt that this was done as an election ploy. But there's no question that Putin, if you look at the election results, you look at the poll numbers over the last few years, he has thrived by peddling and pandering to the Russians, this kind of a brand of nationalism. And the Russians believe the garbage that the Russian media put out. One day after another, you see lies and more lies. The Russians have denied they have had anything to do with this attack. That's hard to believe, given that the agent in question, Novichok, was produced only in Russia, and as far as we know, no one else has access to it.
Well, there's an interesting theory which I wanted to run by you, Charles Kupchan, and that is that my understanding is that the Russian people think that their leader is incredibly clever and that he's pulled off one of the greatest coups of all, which is to basically put his guy in the Oval Office, Donald Trump. And that has led the Russian people to feel somewhat relaxed about the United States, that the Americans aren't going to attack us because our brilliant leader owns the guy in the White House. And that is an explanation for why they chose to beat up on the Brits as a convenient kind of foreign enemy as opposed to the United States, because it wouldn't have worked because the Russian people, I'm told, don't really. Maybe they do now that Trump has finally done something, but prior to that, prior to Trump's expulsion of 60 Russian spies from the U.S., that has been apparently a pretty common mindset, that they figure that Putin is a genius who pulled off the greatest coup of all, which is to put his guy in the Oval Office.
Well, you know, I think that if Putin thought that he had his guy in the Oval Office, he's probably come to a different conclusion, in that the relationship between Washington and Moscow has really deteriorated. And one of the reasons that Congress passed legislation making it difficult for Trump to take sanctions off is because they didn't trust Trump. And they said that they wanted to keep Russia's feet to the fire. And if you, Mr. President, aren't going to do it, we're not going to do it either. And now you have a situation where Trump himself has finally agreed to take steps to punish the Russians. Do they think that they have a guy in the Oval Office, that the Russians are now the puppet masters? I'm not so sure about that, but I do think that they are reveling in the political mess that Donald Trump has made. There's no question that the Russians wanted to sow dissension and polarization in the United States. Most of that was homegrown, but they certainly added to it. And so I think the main their main view right now is that the United States is having a hard time making it through the day because its political institutions and its governance is so messed up.
Well, if Putin's motive was to weaken and divide America, then he has succeeded.
He has succeeded. I mean, I don't want to overstate that success because, you know, 85% of the situation in this country is internal. It has to do with the long-term hollowing out of the political center, the loss of moderates among both Democrats and Republicans. If we were not divided among ourselves, Putin would have a much harder time playing his game. But we give him a lot of grist for the mill, and the Russians have done a very good job of taking advantage of it. We now know that they've been all over Facebook, all over Twitter, buying ads and playing hardball when it came to disrupting our election and trying to orchestrate a Trump victory.
Well, just in the last few minutes, let me try to speculate on Putin's motives here, given, again, what a brazen act it was. One of the other explanations that I've heard is that he got rid of all of his sober, international, experienced people like Sergei Ivanov, his chief of staff, and has brought in a bunch of hawks and sycophants and hardliners. And the worst of all is Nikolai Patrushev, the national security advisor. And there's an ironic situation now where we here in the United States with John Bolton may well have a mirror image of Nikolai Patrushev as our national security advisor in John Bolton, which is certainly doesn't augur well. But I guess the bottom line, what I'm hearing is that there are no people speaking truth to power in the Kremlin, and these people like Patrushev are giving him bad information. And Patrushev is not like Ivanov, who was a seasoned resident, a spy under diplomatic cover, spent a lot of time in Scandinavia and other Western countries, where this guy is, you know, in other words, he's empowered the FSB to do what the SVR does. Is that what you're hearing?
I mean, I think that's a fairly accurate statement, but it's not new. This goes back really to 2012 when Putin came back to the Kremlin and he started to build a network around him of sycophants, of former colleagues in the security services, of people in the military, oligarchs that crossed him either had to leave the country or they were thrown in jail. And therefore, even though you have a lot of people in Russia that are rich, they are rich at the pleasure of the czar. And that means that there really is no effective pushback. Nobody is speaking truth to power. Is it getting worse? Yeah, it may be, given the change that you just discussed and Ivanov's departure. But I don't think that this is anything new. What is new is the mirror imaging that's taking place on this side. You've got Trump, you've got a Pompeo who's heading to the State Department, and John Bolton. All three of them, I think, are worryingly hawkish. It remains to be seen whether that hawkishness gets directed against Russia or not. I think Trump will continue to apply the brakes. But I would say that we are headed into a bumpy and dangerous moment when it comes to national security.
So are we down to one adult in the room, just in closing, the Secretary of Defense, General Mattis, to speak truth to power in the Oval Office?
Well, I would say that Mattis is the most sober of the people that will be around the president. I think the chief of staff, John Kelly, even though tough on issues of immigration and apparently somewhat populist in orientation like the president, is also a seasoned professional. So I don't think that we should all be heading to the border quite yet. And the other point I would make is that even when the president was surrounded by seasoned professionals, including McMaster, Mattis, and Tillerson, he has done an enormous amount of damage. Even when there are adults in the room, we have a president who is his reckless and dangerous. And so I'm not so much worried that the problem is Bolton or the problem is Pompeo, although they may be problems. The core problem is the president of the United States.
Yeah, but another way to interpret what you just told us, Charles Kupchan, is that things have been bad, but they're going to get worse.
I would say that things could take a turn for the worse, and that when it comes to the Iran deal, I certainly wouldn't hold my breath that Trump is going to keep the United States a party to that agreement. I'm hope for the best that when and if the president meets the leader of North Korea, that conversation goes well. But we are certainly, I would say, able to imagine that the United States is going to find itself in another war sometime in 2018.
Well, on that note, sobering as it is, I thank you for joining us, Charles Kupchan.
My pleasure.
And again, I've been speaking with Charles Kupchan, who was Director of European Affairs on the National Security Council during the Clinton administration. He's now a Professor of International Affairs at Georgetown University School of Foreign Service, and he spent the last 3 years of the Obama administration as Special Assistant to President Obama for National Security. And his latest book is How Enemies Become Friends, The Sources of Stable Peace. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back examining moves by China's self-declared leader for life, Xi Jinping, to impose Communist Party censorship on Hollywood movies.